This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 28th of January 2016 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Today I'm joined by Charmaine Lovegrove, co-founder of Dialogue Scouting Page-to-Screen Consultancy. Over the next 15 minutes or so, we'll be discussing two novels, A Guide to Berlin by Gail Jones, and the latest from Moroccan writer Taha Ben Jaloun called The Happy Marriage. Then we'll talk bad diet habits as Bea Wilson releases her brand new book about relearning eating experiences to lead a healthy lifestyle. That's called First Bite, How We Learn to Eat. That's all to come on today's edition of the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Charmaine. Your first pick today is A Guide to Berlin by Australian author Gail Jones. It sounds like a travel guide, the title, but it isn't. Tell us what this novel is about.
So the title, A Guide to Berlin, was actually a short story by Nabokov, which was written in 1925 when Nabokov was 26 years old and living in Berlin. So Gail Jones has taken the borrowed the title from Nabokov, which I think is a very brave thing to do, yeah. And has introduced us to these six international travellers. There's two Italian, there's a Japanese couple, an American and an Australian cast. And essentially, they're sort of in Berlin. They're not really sort of sure about themselves, sort of suddenly finding, all of them finding themselves in this sort of very cold and, you know, dark city that can be really overbearing in its with its winter. And they, when Cass arrives from Australia, then she... You know, she just has no idea what to expect with the Berlin winter. And she ends up going to a Nabokov shrine and she meets an Italian called Marco and he introduces her to the rest of the group. And they end up like in these apartments, like sharing stories and that sort of speak memory that we know from Nabokov and sharing stories of their lives, their own biographies and sort of coming together in a way that only expats can do outside of themselves.
Right. I mean, it's interesting. You've got this kind of frame narrative of them going in, but then you've got all these short stories in a way. I mean, Jones has written a couple of collections of short stories in the past. Do you see this as can this be read as a kind of a novel, but also a collection of short stories?
Yeah, I think you can kind of see that that framework. And I think, you know, it's the Nabokov that that runs through. It's the Berlin that runs through and that sort of brings these individual stories together. But I think what she's done here really well is given voice to each individual character whilst it being from a first person narrative from Cass, which is another device which is shows her skills, Jones's skills as a story writer. But ultimately, like, the city really kind of comes alive and you can really tell that Jones has spent time in Berlin. You know, I've lived in Berlin, so I really felt at home with her understanding of the city and especially the way that she describes like the U-Bahn and the S-Bahn and, you know, and that kind of bewilderment that you get when you're dealing with like different seasons and also being sort of in awe of writers that have lived there.
Right. And these stories that the expats tell, what are they about? I mean, are they about their own sort of backstories? Are they about their past or are they kind of fictional stories?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give too much of what the stories are about because I think that's kind of the core to kind of finding their voice. But I think that, you know, there are definitely... They do allow their own biographies and to come out, like, you know, their personal history and the way that they see the world. And then they somehow are managing to relate it to Nabokov. And I think whilst they're trying to work out how to find their feet in Berlin, then they literally follow Nabokov's footsteps through the city in his kind of 1920s Berlin, which... You know, I think is so evocative and a really, really great device to use for the characters because I think often when people move away from a city, it's about, move to a city from elsewhere. It's about trying to find yourself and who you are in a new place. And so actually using somebody else's experience can somehow kind of soften the blow or make the experience kind of rounder or what, you know, what we all like to describe as sort of more authentic.
And do you think, I mean, you've mentioned Nabokov a couple of times. Do you think if you haven't read Nabokov, I mean, heaven forfend, but if you haven't read Nabokov's writing, do you think you'll get as much from this novel?
Yeah, I think I'm hoping that everybody will want to read Nabokov if they haven't already. And I think that he's used as a kind of a guide, but I don't think that you would feel outside of his writing, you know. And she's very different. She has a very different style. I'm reading her in English as a first language. You know, it's a different period, but it's a great kind of homage. But it also could just be in the background, and a little bit like Eleanor Catton's Luminaries. You know, if you're into astrology, then you can really read that within the characters and the setting, but if you're not, then you can also take the book and, you know, you can take it from a different direction. And I think that's what Jones has also done.
Right. And just briefly about Jones herself, I mean, obviously she's an Australian, and Cass, the narrator, is also Australian. Is there a kind of autobiographical aspect to this work, do you think?
I mean, I can definitely tell that she spent time in Berlin, and that she's kind of, you know, tried to escape something. But I think the age and the experience is very unique to Cass, and also a lot of kind of expat experiences that I imagine that Gail Jones, having written as much as she has and having her status as a writer, may not have experienced herself, but I can imagine that she met a lot of people who in Berlin who had experienced things such as Cass, and therefore she was able to attribute that to her character.
That was A Guide to Berlin by Gail Jones, which is out now, published by Harville Secker. The Happy Marriage is our second book for today. This is a new novel by Taha Ben Jelloun, the internationally acclaimed Moroccan poet and writer, that explores two sides of the same marriage, firstly from the husband's point of view and then from the wife's. Charmaine, how do the two narratives here balance each other? I mean, we've got the title, A Happy Marriage. Is this a happy marriage, or is the title a bit misleading?
Well, I kind of feel like we're jumping from a homage from like one Russian writer to another, and now, you know, going from Nabokov to Tolstoy with Anna Karenina. And in Anna Karenina, then Tolstoy, you know, it's like all happy families are alike, and this is a happy marriage that is not at all happy. And I mean, it's just so, I'm going to start by saying that Taha Ben Jelloun is my absolute favourite writer. And having had a bookshop and doing the job that I do, then I get asked every day what my favourite book is. And his book, This Blinding Absence of Light, is absolutely my favourite book. And I think I sold tons of copies at my bookshop. And I think people all over Berlin and all over who've now moved all over the world have now got a copy that they remember buying from my bookshop. And I just think that his writing is absolutely spectacular. So I was really excited to be able to read this very early.
Did it live up to your expectations?
I mean, absolutely. What was your first feeling? Totally a master of human emotion, and like the gravity of the everyday, and trying to get through life with the everyday struggles whilst being completely sort of focused on yourself. And I just think he's just so masterful. And I've never read him as, you know, in French originally, but this translation by Andre Nafis Sahili is just absolutely stunning, and it was a real pleasure to read. So you have a painter, and he is essentially from like quite a upper class family from Fez, and he's really ambitious, and he's been really successful, and he has a stroke. And he blames his stroke on his marriage and his wife and Amir. And basically he's like, the tyranny of their marriage has caused him to have a stroke. So he goes to Casablanca and sort of writes his memoirs and kind of remembers his life through all of his different lovers. And, you know, he's so eloquent, and you know, you really believe him, and he's not given a name, but you really believe, you know, him as an artist and as a man who had set out into the world to achieve something great, and that he's been held back by this woman who's very scornful. And then at some point you get to Amir's side, and she's really angry, and kind of, you know, you start seeing her side. And
Is it told in the way that she finds the manuscript or something?
And exactly. Then... She finds a manuscript, and she finds some letters, and she starts sort of reading about herself, and she just cannot believe that her husband can talk about her in this way, and that he sees their marriage like so poignantly different to how she sees it. And she's absolutely enraged. But because she's from sort of more of a working class background, she's from a Berber family, you know, she was always like a very sort of feisty, fiery woman who didn't have the resources that he had, then, you know, the language really portrays that as well. So she's very angry about how, you know, the injustice that she feels that he served to her. And you just really see the two sides of this marriage. And it's so fascinating to kind of, you know, they're from Morocco. They're speaking in a different language. You know, it's like you understand that this is a translation, like this is a different culture that you're embarking on. But they have exactly the same problems that, you know, we have in the UK and you know, all over the world. So it's a totally universal story that's just very much seeped in its setting.
Okay. I mean, it's about the kind of the power of storytelling as well, in a way, isn't it? I mean, we always say that power is the ability to tell a narrative and dictate a narrative. That's why, you know, it's called history, not herstory and all that. But it's interesting that the Benjaloon has the man tell the story first and then the woman retells the story, because this is at a time when women's rights in Morocco are on the cusp of change. That's when this novel is set.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the core of it is that ultimately, he feels as though he's the victim. And I think the power of the story is taken the woman in the story takes her power back by telling her own story. And I think that it really reminds us that sometimes we listen to only one side, and that men often have a longer, more eloquent way of being able to tell their side of the story, and that women are always just seen as fiery and crazy. And almost by taking that power back and trying to regain her dignity of her giving her side of the story, then we see a much more balanced view of their marriage. And then you feel, you know, kind of almost privileged that you've been able to have that insight into their lives.
The Happy Marriage by Charmaine's favourite writer, Tahar Benjaloon, is out now, published by Melville House. We're going to switch to non-fiction now to finish the show and take a look at a book by food writer Bea Wilson. First Bite, How We Learn to Eat explores eating habits around the world with a mix of anecdote and scientific evidence. We're obviously all obsessed with our health and diets generally, and bookshop shelves are full of volumes looking at eating. Charmaine, what makes this book stand out from the crowd?
I mean, she's just a great sort of food anthropologist, really, Bea Wilson. And I think everything that she writes, then we should read, because we're all eating and consuming food. And it's just a great way to think about why and how, not just the kind of food for fuel or, you know, pretty plates, but to really think about, you know, how food is an important part of our life, our social life and our cultures. So what she's trying to do with this book is kind of look at the sort of almost chaotic relationship that we have with food as individuals, and how that's entangled with our memories of childhood. And, you know, essentially it's sort of the starting point that if you have these relationships with food, with your parents, where if your parents want you to be quiet, and as a parent I've definitely been guilty of this, but giving my child a sweet or giving him something to contain him, that is not necessarily kind of the most healthiest food. And then kind of looking at how that actually affects your life as an adult. And so it's interesting things like, you know, yeah, trying to get a toddler to you know, eat a wine gum or something, and then as an adult you know you have sweets as a guilty pleasure, but then as a health food fanaticist, then you know you drink juice, juice is seen as having as much sugar as the sweet, but we don't feel guilty about drinking a juice as the way that we do with eating a sweet. And it's kind of very kind of complex ideas around something that's actually, you realise as she untangles these ideas, that it's really simple, and that really what we have to do to have a healthier relationship with food is to essentially enjoy it. And people that enjoy their food, which is the biggest takeaway that I got from this book, is that people that enjoy their food tend to have a healthy relationship with lots of other elements of their life. But they're also able to maintain their weight and live a kind of healthier, more relaxed life. And those that don't, essentially, then that's where you get into, like, you know, either sort of eating disorders and obesity and, you know, lots of other problems around food.
Right. I mean, one of the interesting things about this book is it takes a very global perspective. I mean, what do we learn about other eating habits in other countries?
So there's a really interesting part about Japan. And before World War II, then there wasn't really, Japan didn't really have like a particularly healthy diet. It was kind of carb heavy and sort of lots of unrefined food. And then after World War II, there was sort of an economic boom in Japan, and it meant that there was refrigeration. It meant that the people started experimenting more. And so the sort of stunning bento boxes or the irresistible kind of umami flavors that we all love today, then those are, that became what Japanese food is famed for. And but it wasn't always the case. So looking at, like, she looks at how an individual can change their habits, but also how a whole society. And I think that's kind of the key of realizing that it really is about changing patterns and the sort of psychology of change.
And is there one place that we should look to as the kind of shining example of where food is eaten best, or where the behaviour around food is best?
Well, I think kind of just going back to what I said earlier of like the pleasure as an effective strategy for change. And I think that, you know, I was reading an article earlier in a newspaper about gastropubs in the UK and how they've completely changed how we eat and drink and socialise. And, you know, you often go to a local pub and you don't know whether or not you're supposed to eat there or drink there. But in the end, it's just filled with tables of people, of men and women and children having a really good time. And the food always has to be really good quality, and the drink has to be really have great variety of wines. And I just think we're experimenting more. And I think that the sort of sociability of food and increases our good habits. And I think that it seems that those habits can last a lifetime.
Absolutely. I think B. Wilson should turn to the appear into the gastropub next. That would be nice.
Yeah.
First Bite by B. Wilson is out now, published by Fourth Estate. And I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to my guest, Charmaine Lovegrove. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. This show was produced by Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow to talk Sundance Film Festival. But for now, goodbye, and thanks very much for listening.